Church family, I love you guys so much, and we're glad to be returning to you, and I appreciate those, as Brenda said, who stood in this place and brought the word to you while I was gone. So we'll continue on our Love Cincy theme, and I hope that you're keeping in mind how you can love your neighbors, and that's a good thing. Perhaps you heard about the wife who was trying to get her husband to get out of bed and go to church. And he groaned, "I don't want to go." And she asked, "Well, why not?" And he complained, "Well, it's boring. And the people there don't like me very much. And truthfully, I don't like them very much either." She shoved him out of bed and she said, "You have to go." He said, "Why?" "Because you're their preacher." Now, there's no personal reflection on that, I want you to know. But how many circumstances have you been in when all you can think of is, "I don't want to go. I don't want to go." Your boss designated you to sit through the boring all-day meeting. No thanks. You know, your friends picked a restaurant that you don't like. And then afterwards, it's the ballet. Now, I happen to like the ballet, but some of you wouldn't, so you don't want to go. You don't want to go. Maybe people invited you over have out-of-control kids, and the wife talks incessantly, and you just don't want to go. Your boyfriend wants to take you to the movies to see a horror film, and you'd rather see a chick flick, a romantic movie. The baby cries in the middle of the night, and your wife says, "It's your turn." And you don't want to go. That, of course, is purely hypothetical. That never happened. The teenager doesn't want to go to the family reunion. Someone doesn't want to go get a root canal. Girls' night out, your friends are trying to take you to a rowdy nightclub and you don't want to go. Your kids look you in the eye and they say, "Mom, you know, we just can't take care of you anymore. We just can't do it. You're going to have to move into a nursing home." And you don't want to go. We can all think of "I don't want to go" scenarios. Jesus said, "Go." He said, "Go. Make disciples." Jesus said, "Go into all the world and present the good news." And we have good news. But too many of us have reasons that we really don't want to go and do that. Oh, we're all for it. But somebody else should go. You know, somebody else do the talking because it's scary. And we wouldn't know what to say. And we don't want to alienate our friends. And everyone should just be able to choose their own way anyway. And it kind of makes us feel awkward and unnatural to have those kind of conversations. What if they ask something I don't know how to answer? And nobody likes someone else trying to impose their faith on them. And I'm frankly not good enough. You know, they're going to say, "Who are you to talk to me about religion? I know you. And why waste my time anyway? That person will never believe." In her book, Out of the Salt Shaker, Becky Pippert says, "Christians and non-Christians have something in common. We're both uptight about evangelism." We're both uptight about it. You know, God sent Jonah to preach to the city of Nineveh, cruel enemies of his people. And so he didn't want to go. He didn't think they deserved an opportunity. So he tried to flee the assignment. But you can't outrun God. And the book of Jonah tells us how he ended up being thrown overboard in the sea. And God saved him from drowning by having an enormous fish swallow him. And when the fish coughed him up onto the shore 3 days later, Jonah finally, "All right, I'll go." But he did it reluctantly. He complied, but he wasn't excited about it. And when he did proclaim the word of the Lord, you know what happened? The entire city. Now you can imagine, all of Cincinnati repented and were spared judgment. Wow. That's amazing. That's the greatest revival ever. The whole city, everybody. Now, we may also be reluctant to go, But what would happen if we did? What would God do if we would just lovingly share the good news with somebody? This month we've been thinking about ways to love our city, love our neighbors. Brian talked about crossing barriers to love, you know. And Ron talked about loving children and their families. One of the most powerful ways that we can love our neighbors is just in conversation. To share the good news of Jesus in the course of our dialogues with friends and neighbors. Now, I don't know all the reasons we're reluctant to do this. I don't know why we don't do this more. But we must do it if we love God and if we really love our neighbors. If we think about the gravity of this good news, we'll do it. I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to Colossians chapter 4, verses 2 through 6 today. Colossians chapter 4 in the New Testament. I think we get hung up sometimes on not knowing what to say. And how do we inject Jesus into our conversations with friends and family? How do we even start a conversation like that? How do we get the ball rolling? I think there are things that we can do to make spiritual conversations feel more natural and less awkward for you and for the one you're talking to. So the Apostle Paul gives us some practical insights in just a few statements in Colossians chapter 4, starting with verse 2. It says, devote yourselves to prayer. Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful, and pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message, so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I'm in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Outsiders, he's talking about people who are not yet believers, who are outside the family of faith. He says, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Some real practical advice here. Now, one of the first things that we need to remember to do is to pray. He says, be devoted to prayer. Be characterized by prayer. Invite God into this process, into your relationships as you attempt to share your faith with someone. Let him get out in front of your conversation before you ever begin. Talk to God first. And then ask his guidance as you talk. To give you the right words, to give you wisdom and the confidence that you need to say what needs to be said. And finally, entreat God for results after your conversation. That what you talked about will sink in and lead to further dialogues. Sometimes I ask God to lead me to the people he wants me to talk to today. You ever do that? I just ask him up front, you know, who do you want me to talk to? And sometimes I'm surprised at the doors he opens, but glad to walk through that. But other times, I know. I've already decided who I intend to talk to. And so I ask God to get out in front and prepare the heart of that person for the conversation. So they'll be receptive and that we can have a real genuine, honest dialogue. I'll never forget when Brenda and I were starting a Bible study in our neighborhood, and we had grown fond of a few families in our neighborhood that our kids played together, and we shared in a carpool together to school, and we shared meals together. We did a lot of things together. And so we decided we were going to dare to invite them to a Bible study. But to be honest, I was a little nervous about it. I was. I was glad about doing it. I was committed to doing it, but I believe in the power of the gospel, but I was uncertain about how this invitation might be received, and I didn't want to squelch the relationship. I didn't want to make the relationship awkward after I gave this invitation, you know, and so now you got this thing going. So I went over to this first family that we were going to invite to join the Bible study one evening, but while I was there, my children and Brenda got on their knees to pray for their receptivity. And it was a powerful teaching time for our kids, because while I was over there talking, they're praying, and I came home elated to announce that God had answered their prayers. This family was quite excited and honored to be asked to join a Bible study with us. In fact, they said, "We know another family we could invite. You know, could we do that? Or hey, why don't we have you talked to so-and-so and so-and-so in the neighborhood?" And so pretty soon we had a handful of couples and a meaningful Bible study. And I think it's because we got out in front of it with prayer. I'll tell you what else I do. I pray for you. I pray for your conversations, for your opportunities, your boldness, that God will give you the words that you need. See, we can pray for one another in this regard, and that's what Paul is talking about here. He says, be devoted to prayer. And he says, hey, and be sure you pray for me as I try to share the message. And he's praying for them as they share the message. He's trying to get us to pray for one another. There's another way to use this praying principle in our conversations. The truth is that more and more people today really don't want to go to church. And that's why we have to go into the world. We have to go to our neighbors, to go to our friends, and start dialogues. And one of the best ways to move a conversation into the spiritual realm is to simply ask your friend, "Can I pray for you? Have you ever tried that? Is there something that I can pray about for you today?" Or maybe they've already shared a concern or a struggle, a challenge that they're facing, and you can say, "Hey, I'd like to pray with you about that." And just pray with them. And see, then that moves their daily struggle into the spiritual realm. And it opens doors to begin to talk about the spiritual dynamics, the spiritual things. I've prayed for people to be healed in those situations. I've prayed for people to get jobs. They needed a job. I've prayed for them to get a job. I pray for relationships to be restored. I pray for people in their grief. And you know what? God has gladly responded. And when that person lands a job or when healing comes, it sparks faith in them. And they begin to trust God more or be more curious about God. Sometimes your unchristian friends don't know what to do with your faith and lifestyle. They don't really know what to make of it. It may seem strange to them, but at the same time, it's compelling. It's attractive. They may like having a spiritual person as a friend. And they love it if you're into Jesus, as long as you're not fanatical or imposing. And they probably don't have a lot of people like that in their lives who access all the powers of heaven except you. You may be the only one. And that's kind of cool. They know someone like that. And they may gain an interest just because you cared enough to pray with them. And when that prayer for them gets answered, then they begin to recognize and glorify God. And they may have more questions about God. So when you pray with them, keep your prayer simple. Keep it in, just use common language, not a bunch of churchy language or anything like that. Just keep it simple and pray for them and see what God does with that. Paul also teaches us here to be wise and tactful. Wise and tactful as we engage people. He instructs, conduct yourselves with wisdom towards those who are yet to believe. We should lead with love. In the way that we act, our kindness creates opportunities to talk about the one who loves us. Our rare and consistent lifestyle creates intrigue. Rub shoulders with people who are yet to believe. You know what? I know some of you are doing this, but take a walk in your neighborhood. Not a speed walk where you're trying to, you know, lose weight. But take a casually stroll through the neighborhood. Go walk your dog or something. That's what I do. And you know what? People stop. They're out watering their flowers or out playing with the kids or something. And they'll stop and have a conversation with you. It might be, a lot of times my conversations begin over my dog. That's where it starts. Oh, that's a cute little dog. Oh, you know, can I pet him? You know, no. And then we start talking about this and that. And next thing you know, it just builds rapport, builds relationship. And the Lord gives you opportunities in those things. So be wise. Start mixing it up with people. Take a casual walk to the neighborhood. Join a ball team, you know. Work together a carpool with some people. Talk with your coworkers. You're at the senior center, regular customer service people who commonly wait on you. I can't always choose, but when I can, select the same bank teller, the same cashier, the same service personnel. I try to do that so that we can build a relationship with one another. I smile and I try to speak warmly and tease with them a little bit. I make over them, you know, and I build this friendly rapport. I want to become a customer that they're looking forward to interacting with. They'll beam when they see me coming. They're looking forward to that conversation. And that's what I want, because there's a whole lot of people that they deal with that aren't very nice, you know, or are in a hurry or whatever it is. And so you can give a lift to their day. And then when you approach them, you don't say, you know, if God were to ask you whether you're going to heaven or hell, what would you say? That's not the way to start with people. That's too abrupt. It's a turnoff in this culture. So it's not the place to start. Find a more, just build relationship first and look for opportunities. Don't go in guns a-blazing. Because if people feel like you're in their face or trying to cram religion down their throat, they're going to close their hearts. They'll put up a wall. They may even stay away from you. Now, I'm not normally a very confrontive kind of person, in-your-face kind of person, but the times I have come on too strong, you know what happened? I lost interest. People didn't want to listen anymore. You know, it created a barrier. So listen. Listen respectfully. Show genuine interest in them. Use loving, relational tact. Acknowledge their troubles, their opinions, their beliefs. Even if you don't agree with their beliefs, acknowledge respectfully their beliefs without condoning. Listen for opportunities that may show up in subtle reveals. Sometimes you can just see, hey, there's something going on here. They're bothered about something. They need something. There's an agenda here. There's something on their heart and mind. And listen for those cues. And don't try to make a convert with every conversation. You're not going to do that. That's not the goal. Normally, gentle persuasion takes months, even years of dialogues. So be wise and don't get caught up in any arguments, but do try to get to the core concerns. For example, a question about biblical teaching on sexuality is not necessarily an invitation for you to explain biblical sexual ethics. That may be out of context for the person and what you're going to try to say to them about that. Okay? So that's, but there's something going on. Look for the underlying question. It might be, am I welcome in your Christian community? That might be what they're really asking. Do you look down on me? Can God love me? A good way to discern the underlying question is to say, well, why do you ask that? Why do you ask that? Hey, that's a good question. What do you think about it? And then listen. Genuinely listen. And that will help you fashion informed and loving responses to people. Paul teaches us then to make the most of our opportunities. He tells us to pray, and then we better be alert. If we're going to be praying for opportunity, we better be alert. Be ready to step through the door when it opens up. Be bold but gentle. Jesus said, be as shrewd as serpents and as innocent as doves. Okay? Innocent as doves. There's no agenda here or whatever. You're just being loving. Sow seed that one day may bear fruit, or as Greg Kuchel suggests, put a pebble in their shoe. You ever get a grain of sand in your shoe? And it just irritates you all day long. You know, it's just there. It's all, you can't get your mind off of it until you take care of it, right? And that's the idea. In these conversations, don't talk so much about yourself. In fact, you got to listen much more than you talk. People generally like to talk about themselves and are willing to talk. Ask questions that elicit explanations, and then, as I said, listen. You know, a question like, how you doing today? What kind of response is that going to get? Fine. And it's over. All right? Fine. We all do that. That's why. You know. But if you change your question a little bit with, man, you seem excited today. What's up? That means they're going to explain something to you now. That opens the door. You look tired. What can I do to share your load? What's going on here? And they get a chance to tell you. Prompts elaboration. Well, you know, what do you think of the Reds' new phenom, Aquino? You know, what do you think of that guy? Man, the Punisher. Will that open a door for conversation? What are you doing to help your kids adjust to being back in school? You know, people are thinking about that. That's a good question. It'll create some conversation. It'll create some dialogue, and you don't know where it leads. It might not lead to a spiritual conversation, but it might. If nothing else, though, it builds rapport. It builds relationship for future dialogues. A few months ago, our missionary partner, Jessica Shady, was at a bus stop in France, and she had an opportunity. A man just asked her for directions. She wanted directions. And they ended up exchanging a few words and then getting onto the same bus where the conversation thankfully continued. And they talked. Pretty soon they discovered that English was a better language for both of them. He was from Bangladesh. And he was really struggling keeping up with Jessica's French, which is coming along quite well. Isn't that great? Isn't that good news? So anyway, they started speaking English, and he just started telling her about moving to France, and he had two small businesses, and he was trying to get enough money. He wanted his family to come and join him and live in Paris. And so he talked quite a bit about that. And she had him talking, you know, and then realizing she was a foreigner like him, he inquired why she was in France. Now, she could have dodged the spiritual dynamic there. She could have just, you know, said any number of different things. But she simply said, "My family moved here to make new churches and tell people about Jesus." Well, that shut him up for a moment. There was a moment of silence, you know. As he reflected on that, but then he talks more and he told her about his father who had faith, Muslim faith. But then he admitted he does not have any faith. And then, unfortunately, his bus stop arrived and he had to leave. Jessica offered, though, "I'll pray for you and your family." And he gave a look and he nodded agreement and went on his way with a little grain of sand in his shoe. You know what I'm talking about? Going to think about that conversation some more. One guy was sharing with me how much he wanted to be a good husband and father. And just conversation, you know. And he had allowed work and making more money become his focus. And his three children were growing and he realized they needed him. And he wasn't there for him. I mean, he felt like he was missing something. He really needed to make some substantial changes in his life. He didn't know where to start. I could have given him some Dan's advice. But what good would that be? I just shared with him how Jesus can help rearrange priorities and create a beautiful center point for his family, and he could lead the way. So Paul urges us, let your conversation be full of grace, seasoned with salt. Does that describe your conversations on a daily basis? Full of grace, seasoned with salt. So he teaches us to season our conversations. It's amazing what happens with our food when we sprinkle in a little salt. You know, the flavor explodes. Salt has the capacity of enhancing flavor in certain foods by accentuating the sweet and suppressing the sour. It'll do that in some foods. But in other foods, it will actually bring out the savory flavor. And salt's amazing in what it does. It's a valuable thing. But we don't dump salt on, do we? You don't pour a whole thing on. You know, we lightly sprinkle it. We just sprinkle a little bit in. And we do the same with the gospel, with the good news. We don't pour it on. We subtly sprinkle it into our conversations. And it should feel somewhat natural and instead of forced or intrusive. It should be comfortable for you and the person you're talking to. Let me suggest a few starter questions that can lead to an opportunity for some spiritual thought. Try this question sometime. What did you do this weekend? That'll be a great question for you tomorrow. You can ask that question. Somebody, some friend, what did you do this weekend? And let them tell you. In fact, I want you to do that right now. I want you to find someone sitting near you and just turn to them and tell them what you did this weekend. Go ahead. Just take a moment. Tell them what you did this weekend. Really comfortable. That's a natural, normal thing for us to talk about. We do that all the time. It's harmless. It's just a typical question. Most will gladly share a few highlights of their weekend, and they'll be glad that you had enough interest in them to ask. But then often they will turn around and grant you the same opportunity to tell them about your weekend, and you can just genuinely do that. Oh, hey, my weekend was fine. You know, on Friday night, went to the Reds game, and we hung with friends. It was a really good time. I slept in on Saturday. And, oh, I went to church on Sunday. I go to church every Sunday, and I love it. You should come sometime. And leave it there. And then you just salted that conversation a little bit. You sprinkle in. Now, the person may ask more about it. They may respond to what you said about that. Or they may not. But you planted the seed. You know, you sowed something. So just insert a little something in there. This isn't weird. You're just being yourself. You're not springing a trap. You're sincerely encouraging them to join you at church because you love it. And you want them to experience that too. We make referrals all the time to doctors and plumbers and electricians and apps on your phones and all kinds. We do that all the time. And we should certainly do it about the most important thing in life. So referrals are loving and thoughtful things that friends do. Here's another good question. What's your story? This is particularly good if you're just getting to know someone. Hey, tell me your story. What's your story? You're showing a personal interest in people, and they're going to respond to that. You're inviting them to talk openly, to share genuinely, and as they share, you can be alert to things to pray about or that you might want to discuss in more detail at another time. You might be alert to some open doors to share Christ in that conversation. People have, when I ask that story, people have told me all kinds of tales. I mean, crazy vacation stories, stories about family, stories about hobbies and sports, stories about their career. I hear a lot about that. Tragedies they've gone through, divorce, addictions, their childhood, some hurts, illness, losses, dreams, opinions. And sometimes people even share with me about their faith. They don't even know I'm a Christian yet. And they'll mention their faith journey in there. And the Lord gives you an opportunity in that. Now, you can make that question, what's your story, a little more specific and say, do you have a faith story? What's your faith journey? Tell me about that. Often around here, people tell me, in our neighborhood, in our community, people will tell me that they grew up Catholic, the parents are Catholic, but so we never went to church. And I don't really go to church now, but I believe in God. And generally, that's what a lot of people will say. You'll hear that a lot if you ask that question. But that sets up a variety of dialogues to pursue about God, about Catholicism, about church, and why they don't go to church, and so on. Now, again, you may not cover all of that in one conversation, maybe over the course of time. Just keep asking questions about people's beliefs and views and experiences and reasons. One guy I asked about his faith, he said he had none. He didn't believe in God. And he believes everyone just decides what's right and wrong for themselves. And choose to believe if you want, but I'm not going to. Everyone just makes up their own mind about how they should live and so on. And that gave me the opportunity to ask him, well, where does this sense of how you should live, this sense of right and wrong come from? Where does that originate? What makes us believe that one behavior is good and another behavior is not good? Where do we get that sense of right and wrong? Where does that come from? And he really didn't have an answer for that. We just choose. And so I asked, well, how does that work out? If what you think is right conflicts with my well-being, or if what you think is right conflicts with my sense of justice, or what if what I think is right harms you? Then what do? Well, that shut down the conversation right there. He didn't want to talk anymore because he realized his view was illogical and he couldn't deal with it anymore. So he didn't want to converse about that because you're trying to get me to think about God. But I did put a grain of sand in his shoe. Now he's got to wrestle with that, with his view. Question number three. And I've not used this one, but it's okay. How's your year going? How's your year going? Again, a personal interest question that will be appreciated and usually elicit some details in some form of story. Some will answer more vaguely, more generally. So you might have to prompt them with, well, what do you mean by that? Because you say, how's your year going? Great. Well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by great? So you might have to ask, well, why do you think it's going so well? Or why do you think it's going so poorly? What's your next step? And so as the details unfolds, it gives you an opportunity, again, to celebrate with them, to empathize with them, to share what you've learned from your experiences, and maybe to suggest how Christ can enhance their circumstances as he has yours. You can testify a little bit. And so question number four, how would you describe the state of our nation or our culture right now, our world? And most people will say, well, it's kind of mess. It's a mess. Something like that. People will respond. You can get more personal. How would you describe the state of your life right now? It's a mess. You know, it's not where I want it to be. Yeah, it's good here, but it's not really all I want it to be. That question opens the door for you to share the gospel in three circles that we've talked about before. Because when they say life is messy, can you put that slide up there? When they say life's messy, then you talk about the brokenness of our world, the messy nature of our world. And there we go. So you start with that circle. And, you know, but how does it get that way? Well, God had a design. God designed everything for good. And when we follow God's design, things go well. But when we're not following God's design, that always leads to brokenness. It leads to messiness. And when we're in this, it's miserable. And we try to find ways out. We try to find various ways to escape or to solve the problem. And it doesn't go away. In fact, sometimes our escapes make it worse. And so we're stuck in this brokenness, but there's good news. God did something about it. God came himself in the person of Jesus, and he bore all our brokenness on the cross as he died for us, and he conquered the grave. And so if we will turn to him and be saved, then he leads us back towards his design. He gives us new life, and we begin to transition into a new way of living. So you can use those three circles. Draw it out on a piece of paper or a napkin. You can share that in 2 minutes in response to, hey, the world's a mess right now. Hey, did I ever show you this? And then just, you're in. Question number five. What do you think of Jesus? What do you think of Jesus? Now that gets right to the heart of things, doesn't it? And not everybody's ready for that question. But when you feel that's the right time, then launch that question and be ready to listen keenly and earnestly and respectfully. Don't criticize their response, but find what you can affirm and agree with in their view. And see if you can discern why they believe what they believe about Jesus. And gradually share what you believe about Jesus and why you believe that. When your friend shares with you a struggle they're going through, it might be a time for you to share your 30-second testimony. Doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out thing, a big story. You can do it in 30 seconds and then elaborate as needed. You know, there was a time in my life when our marriage was a wreck, and I was really messing up. But when I met Jesus, I discovered that my joy, my happiness is not dependent on my relationship with my husband. It's on my relationship with Him. And that changed how I approached life, and it changed our marriage. And you say it in a few seconds like that. There was a time in my life when I was this. But when I met Jesus, here's what happened. And show the contrast. Okay? A few other ways to bring spiritual matters into your dialogues. Did I tell you what our preacher talked about Sunday? Have you ever done that? Or, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because on Friday night in our life group, we talked about that. Have you ever heard the story of Deborah? And then you're in. You think there's any hope for more civility in politics? Why do you think that? Why do you think most people don't go to church? And that gets you in all kinds of conversations. What are you reading right now? If you could change one thing about your life or character, what would it be? What are you doing to make that change? Are you involved in a church? Have you found a church yet? Have you ever considered the difference between Christianity and other religions? You know, because a lot of people will say to you that, well, all religions are basically the same. Have you ever considered the difference between Christianity and other religions? Gives you a chance to talk. Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? Where are you heading right now in your spiritual journey? And we kind of alluded to that earlier. Let me ask you something. Aren't you thankful? Aren't you profoundly thankful for the person or group that cared about you, that loved you enough to introduce you to Jesus, to start that conversation with you? Aren't you so profoundly grateful for that? I'm wondering, will you love someone that much? Will you love someone that much to start that dialogue? Jesus said, go. Go make disciples. But I want you to notice, He added, and I will be with you always. Let Him do the heavy lifting on this. You know, it's His harvest anyway. It's His fruit. You be faithful and loving in sowing the seed and seasoning your conversations with grace, and let the Spirit do the work. Let's sow as much seed as we can for the harvest. Lord, You told us to pray, so we're going to do that right now. There's people that we need to talk to all around us. And give us wisdom and fill us with Your Spirit. Enable us to come up with the right words and the courage to say what we need to say, to share this wonderful, incredible, life-saving news. Sometimes we don't want to go because we're scared of things. We're busy. Pray that we can overcome all those obstacles by Your might, by Your Spirit. And that we would go. That we would speak up. That we'd do it gently. That we'd do it in the context of relationship. That we'd be loving. Lord, we're going to trust You to take our conversations and make the most of them. In Jesus' name. Amen. Maybe someone's had that conversation with you and you've decided, I want to be a follower of Jesus. I want to accept His salvation and forgiveness. So if you want to be baptized into Christ today, we invite you to come on up during our encounter time here. It's a great time to celebrate the communion we have together with the saints and around the Lord's table. And so during this time, if you want to serve yourself in the four corners of the room and celebrate Christ's sacrifice, His grace for us, please do that with a heart full of joy and with an awareness of your community. But also do it with an awareness of who's not here. The people in your life who don't yet have salvation, who don't know Jesus. And I pray they'll be on your heart as you partake and as you look for ways to talk to them. You can serve yourselves when you're ready.